Connell, you don't need Advanced Hair's services. You've got a fine head of hair, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I do feel a lot of extra pressure, though, before, you know, you read that commercial about hair loss. You said I was an interesting conversation. So I hope I don't disappoint, John. Hope I don't disappoint.
You never do, sir. And you do a nice job on TV, although you were interrupted a lot this week with presidential stuff. And and you laugh, but Donald Trump just seems like was on TV a lot and sometimes in your day part, or either announcing a reduction in prices of drugs like Wegovy or trying to put his spin on what happened on Tuesday. We saw him on TV on Wednesday. And yet the government is still shut down. Let's start there. What's the prescription now? What's going to happen?
I mean, there are all these hints, and this kind of started last week, that they might make some progress. And then what we started hearing, and from our own Capitol Hill reporters and others, is that after Tuesday night, the Democrats were, quote unquote, emboldened by their success. Not that people didn't expect them to have a good night, but I think it's fair to say that their night in Virginia, New Jersey, and other places was better than expected. So now many in the Democratic Party seem to be seeing that as a sign that they have a pretty good hand here politically. You know, politicians tend to overplay their hands, so we'll see. There were some measures floated that might, you know, lead us to believe that there would be a deal in place where there'd be some sort of a negotiation on the Obamacare subsidies and the government would open up. But, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath today. Maybe early next week. Now I'm just speculating, but we're starting to see some hints at least.
I figured with what happened Tuesday that it would just absolutely make a solution come within 5, 6, 7 days, that by next Tuesday we would absolutely have this deal done. But it doesn't seem like the machinery to get that done is in place yet. Is the House in, House isn't in session,
no.
Right? Has Mike Johnson called them back?
No. The House still out of session, saying that it's still up to the Senate to get it done, that the Senate needs to get to 60 votes. And we still keep hearing the same thing from both sides. But like I said, a little bit of a give, I think, over the last couple of days from Thune and company that leads you to believe that, you know, they'd be willing to at least get Thune has supposedly promised the Democrats a floor vote on the Obamacare subsidies. Problem is, a lot of the Democrats right now don't trust the Trump administration and the Republicans to follow through on, you know, a good faith negotiation on extending some of those subsidies. So I think there's kind of a trust problem. So, you know, we'll see. This thing is dragging on now. The airports, of course, today with all the delays and cancellations starting, 4% reduction in air traffic today. They ramp it up by 1% a day until it gets to 10%. So you add that to the fact that the SNAP benefits expiring last week was a big story. And now the president was ordered by a court last night to keep fully funding SNAP or food stamps. So there are real people getting affected, frustration at airports, that kind of thing. Last time led to this, the second longest shutdown now in history being solved. Now this is the longest one. Again, like you said, timeline wise, it seems to make sense sometime early next week if you're betting on it.
But the SNAP benefits are going to be paid for the month of November, right?
Right. Yeah. Said to fully fund it. You know, it's funny when stuff like that happens. Does it make it more likely that the shutdown goes longer, or does it make it more likely that there's a deal? I mean, I don't know, but a judge ordered the administration to fully fund the SNAP benefits by today for November, because, you know, they've been moving money around from emergency sources to, for example, pay the military, pay their salary. And a lot of people say, well, good, you should. And then, well, why can't you do the same with these benefits? And there was an argument within the administration that they didn't have the funds. Well, the judge said, no, you do, and you got to get it done. Now, incentive-wise, does that drag things out? I mean, again, I don't know. I think a lot of this depends on, you know, how they structure. You know, a lot of Republicans, even when we have especially moderate Republicans on, they say, yeah, we're willing to talk about this health care issue and maybe even extending the subsidies for the ACA or Obamacare. But it's a timing thing. Like, do we talk about it and have that in place as part of the deal to open the government? Or do you have to vote on the clean bill, the clean PR?
Yeah, but I want to ask you about that. But, I mean, so it's are you telling me that it just comes down to the simple fact that if the Democrats say, okay, we will open the government back up, we'll give you what you want, but you have to promise us that you will extend the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, that they don't trust them to do
right.
that. I mean, if they make a big announcement and they all shake hands and then say, and then they, the Democrats suspect, though, that then when they do that, then they're going to say, actually, no, we're not going to do it. Ha ha. That's hard to imagine.
I think the Democrats, to be honest, are trying to get more out of them right now because of their big night on Tuesday night, that they see this as more than that, that there's some Democrats are looking at it and saying, all right, good. Well, yeah, we'll get the subsidies extended, but we want more than that. I think there's probably a little bit more to it than just that, to your point.
Were you surprised by the tone of rhetoric from the Supreme Court over the president's use of executive powers?
A little bit. I mean, because everybody, you know, identifies this court, which it is, as a conservative court. But you think about it, that's a conservative position to be skeptical of
yeah.
of the executive branch
right.
of the government. So we really probably shouldn't be surprised. I also don't think necessarily, I'm by no means a constitutional scholar or expert, that just because these justices express some level of skepticism about the president's position, that that necessarily means that he's going to lose this case. You know, there were also some, you know, especially late in the session, I think some indications that maybe some of those justices who were skeptical might not necessarily be leaning against him. So I think maybe some people made too big of a deal about it. We'll see. I mean, it's going to, with the Supreme Court, these things usually take a while. I don't think we'll get a ruling probably before, I don't know, maybe early next year. So we'll see how it kind of plays out. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, although there was a lot of skepticism.
I was imagining we'd get a ruling before Christmas. And if they do rule in the administration's favor, then that will be quite a switcheroo, because the language that took place, in fact, it was the representative from the administration who was making the case who had to do most of the talking. They were just pummeling that guy with his squeaky
yes.
voice. I mean, it was like, give this man a break. He can hardly talk. The Solicitor General, though, could hardly get a word in edgewise. They were cutting him off left and right. And at the end of the day, I think it was Justice Kavanaugh who said that if we grant the president the power in this case, we are making irrelevant the Congress. The president can then do whatever he wants. And do you really want us to do that? Is that really what the Constitution asks us to do? I mean, if he changes his vote on, if he votes in favor of the administration, then it's hard to reconcile that vote with the way he was speaking before the solicitor.
No, I hear you, and that's probably correct. The one thing I would say about this case is I think that it's an important case, but I think its importance is beyond, I think you were making this point with precedent, it's beyond tariffs, which is what it's actually about. I think the you know, degree to which it matters, and the president's been, I think, exaggerating this as well, and so has the other side, on just tariffs, has been exaggerated. I think, you know, all of us, even in the media, I think we made too much of the president's tariffs, like back in the spring. Oh, this is going to end the economy as we know it. And I think now the president's saying, well, without the tariffs, we won't have an economy, or, you know, something to that effect. I think the importance of this case stands in exactly what you were talking about, precedent. Like, if we, you know, at some point, we've been going down this road, right, John, for like decades, decade after decade, where there's been more and more power either being given to or seized by the president, not just this president, by the way, previous presidents. And at some point, is there kind of a tipping point, or we reach a level where someone, in this case, the Supreme Court, steps in and says, all right, enough's enough here. And then now we have to kind of rethink our equal branches of government, because we've been getting away, you know, from that for so long that I think that's the importance of this case, not just the tariffs or even far beyond the tariffs.
I was a little surprised that they didn't talk enough, to my liking, about, is this really an emergency? What's
right.
the national emergency here? And then what's the application of the solution to remedy that? Like, is it fentanyl coming in from Canada? And is that such a national emergency, fentanyl from Canada, that we have to put a tariff on them? It just doesn't seem to make sense. I was also interested in the whole major issues clause, which suggests, well, it's not a clause in the Constitution, but it's an issue that the court abides by now, where it has to be something, if it is something that is so important, so sweeping to the country, I know you know all of this, but I want to make the point, like student loan forgiveness or climate change or COVID restrictions, something that's sweeping, then the president shouldn't exercise his power unilaterally. It should go to the Congress. And all three of those points were things that they did to Joe Biden. Now, Donald Trump wants to exercise his will on the people, isn't this a major issue that should go to the Congress, right?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I think that that's, I always think about it, you know, to bring it back to tariffs for a moment, that, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off made it famous, but Smoot Hawley, which was the famous tariff from years ago, those were members of the Congress, right? And now it's like the Trump tariff, you know. So that's just, I think the tariffs are an example about how the power on Capitol Hill, and it's really been amplified during this administration, even though it's been going in this direction for administration after administration, that the Republican Congress have been willing to cede power to this particular president more maybe than even previous Congresses had under previous administrations. But there's no doubt that every executive in recent memory, whether it's George W. Bush or Barack Obama or Joe Biden and now Donald Trump twice, I mean, they've been taking more and more, whatever they've been, you know, the Congress will give them. And some of this is on the Congress, because I think there's been certain circumstances where leaders in Congress, again, have been saying, well, fine, you do it. You know, you take the blame.
Oh, you think?
And I think that's a huge part of this. Where's like, hey, come on, step up a little bit.
What do we have them for? Connell McShane is the anchor at News Nation. Watch him at 2 o'clock on Comcast, DirecTV, and Dish Network. Connell, thank you, sir.
All right, John. I'll talk to you soon.